welcome to ABA Inside Track, the podcast that's like reading in your car, but safer. I'm your host, Robert Perry Cruz, and with me as always are my fabulous co-hosts.
So Rob, since you're the host, does that make Jackie and I the hostess Twinkies?
Who is this speaking?
It's Diana.
Oh, hi Diana.
Sorry, I forgot to introduce myself.
And who would be the other Twinkie in this pack?
Jackie!
Hi.
McDonald! Come on down!
So in answer to you're mixing your studio metaphors, I think.
That's okay. I was doing Price is Right.
Yes.
I was doing Arsenio.
And you're doing Arsenio.
They're the same.
They're similar. So welcome, everybody. This is a podcast where we talk about research in the realm of behavior analysis. This week, we will be talking about non-contingent reinforcement, or as many of you probably know it, NCR. So we have two fun articles to discuss some applications of NCR. But before we get into that, we are going to do a little review of NCR for those of you who might not use this procedure that much. So, Diana, take it away with an NCR description.
NCR rap.
So cut that mic.
I wish I knew.
Producer.
I wish I had a rap prepared. That would have been really great. I'm sorry. I probably let everybody down right there.
You let me down, actually, because I was like, what? This is a surprise even for me as a co-host.
Rip rap. No, I can't really rap.
Me neither.
What?
I can sing acoustic.
You thought I could do everything.
I'm blown away. This is a shocker that you are not rapping.
I could sing a soft slow tune. NCR. Response independence schedule.
Oh, that's actually pretty nice.
Thanks. Welcome to bedtime magic, right?
Very good. So we call it non-contingent reinforcement, or NCR. But I know there are some listeners out there, as well as perhaps some of us in this room, that might have some beef with that particular term.
Yeah.
Right? Because
I've got some pork with it.
Ruined your description.
I know. I kind of forgot what I was saying. So first of all, you just now, Jackie, called it, what did you just call it?
Response independent schedule.
I really like that. And that is a much more accurate term when we start to talk about what NCR really is.
Mm-hmm.
So non-contingent reinforcement, or response independent schedule of putative reinforcement.
I love that word, putative. When I first found out what it meant, I wanted to say it across like every scenario. Like, you might be my punitive putative husband. You're my putative dog. Even though it didn't make sense.
Are you my putative dinner?
Yeah.
Maybe. Hmm. Depends on how I'm feeling later.
I just like that. Anyway.
Right. So putative means potential. Mm. No, punitive means bad. So those are different. In case people can't quite hear the T there. It's putative reinforcement.
Putative.
So the difficulty with NCR is that if you're calling it reinforcement, as we all know, reinforcement indicates that something has been delivered contingent on a response that increases the future probability of that response. And the key word there is contingent. So if we're talking about non-contingent reinforcement, it's reinforcement that is of some stimulus that we think might be reinforcing that's mm-hmm. delivered not contingent on a particular response, but just delivered freely mm-hmm. on some type of fixed time or variable time schedule.
Right.
So the challenge there is that if we're saying that it is serving as a reinforcer, and the definition of a reinforcer is that it's provided contingent on a response and increasing that response, then you really have to call into question whether we can call NCR reinforcement. Mm-hmm. The additional problem is that if you're providing a reinforcer, it is always following some behavior. Mm-hmm. So it's always going to be delivered contingent upon whatever preceded it, mm-hmm. right? Although it might not occur solely following a particular response. But it's always going to be contingent on something. So there is the possibility when you're using NCR that you're going to adventitiously reinforce a particular behavior on accident and have that behavior start to occur more and more often.
Right. I just really don't love it. I know that NCR is called NCR, but I don't really feel it's reinforcement because you're not actually looking to increase any behavior. And the definition, too, is contingent on a behavior that will increase the future occurrence of that behavior, but you're not really looking for a future occurrence of that behavior because typically you're using NCR to decrease problem behavior by providing some putative item into the environment.
It's a little bit like DRO in that you're sort of hoping that other behavior ends up getting reinforced by increasing the level of reinforcement that's available in the environment and thereby kind of weeding out the problem behavior and replacing it with other types of behavior that you sort of hope were reinforced.
Or nothing. Sometimes that happens too. Some side effects of NCR is that you'd then see a general decrease in all responding because the putative reinforcer is being delivered non-contingently. So then kids may end up doing nothing because they don't have to engage in a particular response to access that reinforcer.
Yeah, you can just sit there.
You can just sit there and you get what that putative reinforcer is. So that's one of the side effects of NCR is that you do see a decrease in problem behavior, but you also may see a decrease in appropriate behavior as well.
Yeah.
But the stated goal of an NCR procedure is not actually to necessarily increase anything so much as just decrease other things in the hopes, like you said, Jackie, that it's, oh, well, if they're not doing this, perhaps these other things will magically appear.
And it can also be thought of as an EO modification, too. So let's say if escape seems really valuable to an individual, then we can just provide a lot of opportunities to escape. Not contingent on a particular problem behavior, but just across the board, thereby reducing the value of escape contingent upon the problem behavior and hopefully seeing that problem behavior decrease. So it's not to say it doesn't necessarily work, but the principles behind it and the reasons why it works are not necessarily reinforcement. So that's why we have a problem with the name, although that is the name that's out there. That's what everyone generally uses. You could also use time-based schedules. FT or VT, but there's still sort of that issue of reinforcement. It's not necessarily reinforcement.
Or you could just call it a response independent schedule.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just going to do that for the rest. Welcome to Easy Listening.
Well, the first article we're going to look at, it's an oldie but a goodie, on the use of response independent schedules or NCRs. You didn't sing, Jackie. I was kind of waiting for that.
Response independent schedule.
Thank you. Okay.
Whew. Where are my backup singers?
Ooh. I can't even figure out how to. You want oohs?
Ah. Oh, that's okay.
Sha-la-la-la-la.
Oh, yes. Don't be shy.
Sha-la-la-la.
That was from Little Mermaid, if you guys didn't know.
It's good. I like Little Mermaid, so if you randomly sing Little Mermaid things, it'll probably decrease some behavior and increase another one. Who knows what? So the first article is schedule effects of non-contingent reinforcement on attention-maintained destructive behavior in identical quadruplets by Hagopian, Fisher, and Legacy from the Journal of Applied Behavior Analysis, 1994. And Diana, why don't you keep this show a-rollin' with a little discussion?
All right. I would love to. I really like this article. It's actually one of my favorite articles, not necessarily because it relates to NCR, but more that I find the title just grabs you and takes you right in because you're like, what? Identical quadruplets who have attention-maintained destructive behavior, what are we going to do in this scenario?
I actually am like this.
Yeah.
That's what I think in my head.
I have a colleague. Jackie was
pulling on her collar when she did that. And she's like, ooh, like a Rodney Dangerfield
book. Yeah. I actually just got hot sweats thinking about it.
I like this article because it seems like this insurmountable problem, right?
There are
these quadruplets, they're identical, they're all engaging in destructive behavior, and it's all happening in the home. That's the type of situation where most people would go in and say, I don't know what we're going to do here. This seems impossible, right? From the parent to the social workers to even the behavior analysts. And yet, Hagopian and colleagues did not go in and say that this was impossible. They went in, looked at the problem, found the function of the behavior.
Said it was really impossible. Oh, no.
Yeah, no. And created a behavior program that worked and was relatively easy to implement. And I guess that's the punchline. I skipped sort of to the end of the article there, that it worked and it was easy to implement. But I'll go into more detail here.
We actually just met Hagopian, too. At Babbitt. He declined to be on our show.
He was a little nervous.
He was a little nervous. But, man, is he smart and nice. So, this just makes me like him even more.
Yeah, I know. Like, this is a real application of the science.
That's nice.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's not the fanciest study or anything like that.
I don't think it has to be either, right?
Not everything has to be. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I really like it a lot for that reason. You know, as behavior analysts, we're all out working in the field and you encounter these situations where you're like, whoa, this is a serious problem. What am I going to do here? And I often reflect back to Hagopian's quadruplets article and just think, well, if they handled that, then I can probably handle this.
There's only one in this situation.
Yeah, exactly. So let me tell you more about the study. Like it says in the title, they were looking at attention maintained problem behavior here, varying types of destruction and self-injury and aggression in four young female quadruplets. They were 5 years old.
Women, am I right?
Hey,
you
now.
Got, you guys get it. I know.
No, don't listen to him.
I'm getting a look.
You better watch out.
Exactly. So they were looking in the study at using NCR, but they added another component as well to try and suss out what's the best ways to deliver non-contingent reinforcement. So they were making comparison between dense and lean schedules from the outset of treatment to see what worked better. In these four female quadruplets, they all had a diagnosis of PDD as well as intellectual disability. And their names were Lori, Lynn, Wanda, and Glenda. And they did have a range of functioning levels. So Lori functioned in sort of a mid-range. She just had some level of intellectual impairment. Lynn and Wanda had a little bit more severe impairment. And then Glenda was pretty profoundly impacted by her disabilities. And they all had pretty similar types of disruptive behavior, which was the dependent variable in this article. There was aggression, disruption, and self-injury. Aggression taking the form of hitting, scratching, kicking, and headbutting. Disruption including throwing, and self-injury including head hitting, body hitting and scratching, and hair pulling.
That's some seriousness right there.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
That's not, they're not joking around. They're not just like whining.
No. Yeah. And imagine there are four.
Four of them doing all this at the same time.
Yeah.
Around bedtime.
Yeah.
Makes you want to go to that house.
Not really. They did note that they did not do a DNA analysis to determine if they were identical. They said, but visually, the researchers could not tell them apart, basically. That's what we got there. So
I like that. I like that they put that in there.
I know. Yeah. Like, we don't know that they were identical for sure. And I think that that's true with identical twins, is sometimes they can look really, really similar, but then
they could be fraternal.
Genetically, they're not actually identical. Identical quadruplets is extremely rare.
Right.
Very, very, very rare.
But for the purposes of the study, I mean, that doesn't really affect our results all that much. So if we were like geneticists, then maybe we'd be like, oh, that matters.
Mm-hmm.
But here, I mean, problem behavior is problem behavior is problem behavior.
Yeah.
Times two more, right?
Well, it could mess up your schedule of reinforcement because you could keep reinforcing the same kid because they're switching rooms and they're coming.
You have to put big numbers on their chest. Put on your number shirt. Right. That's
they
what
don't
I
say
do.
If there's any system to tell them apart right. or anything like that, like colors or hairstyles or anything. But so they did two things in the study. The first was they did a functional analysis for each participant. It was a standard functional analysis. Remember, this is 1994, so they were actually referencing in the article the 1982
nice.
Version of Iwata et al., which was kind of cool to see because the 1994 reprint maybe had just come out or had not yet come out when this was published. So they did a standard functional analysis in which they compared a demand condition, a toy play control condition, and a social attention condition. And for Lori, Lynn, and Wanda, the results were pretty immediately clear. The problem behavior was maintained by social attention. For Glenda, it was a little bit harder to differentiate, so they added in an additional reversal between attention and demand, in which attention continued to responding continued to occur at higher rates during attention. And they did an extended attention condition just to make sure, and it did maintain in that condition. So they did a nice job of making sure that for each participant, attention appeared to be the maintaining variable for their problem behavior. And then what they did following that was a comparison between the two types of non-contingent reinforcement. So again, they wanted to see if you start out with a really dense schedule of non-contingent reinforcement versus a really lean schedule of non-contingent reinforcement, does that make a difference on how much problem behavior decreases and how quickly? So they initially did a baseline, which was they were all 20 minutes in length, and it was identical to the social condition of the functional analysis. And then they did a multi-element comparison between the dense and the lean schedules of reinforcement. So for the dense schedule, they used a fixed time, 10 seconds attention, in which each session of attention lasted for 10 seconds. So if you do that math, it was continuous attention. Okay.
Which is kind of amazing, right? Like, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Like, in life. Like, in your regular day-to-day life.
Nonstop attention?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want that.
Oh, no. Can you imagine? I might want that some days, but most days, no.
Yeah.
Can you imagine delivering that amount of attention?
Only if I knew that it was a session that was going to be over soon and then
no,
I
no,
could
No, yeah,
stop.
But it's your life.
No. Well, I mean, that's ergo the experiment. Right. Like, well, you know what? If you just give all of them attention nonstop, you're going to be fine. See ya. Just write me a check on the way
I
out.
Win.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Wait, you wanted to cook dinner? No. Not available.
What, you wanted to go to the bathroom? No.
We're all coming with you.
Yeah. Make sure you have a big bathroom.
Yeah, right. So that was the dense condition, continuous attention. And then for the lean condition, they started at the schedule that was the schedule that they wanted to be the maintenance schedule, which was a fixed time of, again, 10 seconds of attention, but only delivered every 5 minutes.
Okay.
So that's pretty lean.
Mm-hmm.
Only every 5 minutes they said, oh, hey, Wanda, are you playing with your blocks? That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's quite lean. So it was a comparison between those two conditions. They did that for each participant. Then they did a return to baseline, which was just like the FA condition. And then they returned to the condition that was most successful. And then they did a fading procedure from there.
Mm-hmm.
So not really terribly surprising.
No.
Is that for all participants, the dense schedule of reinforcement was more effective at reducing problem behavior. I know you're shocked.
But not by a lot.
You know, both of them worked to some degree. So to walk through it was a multiple baseline design. I don't know if I actually said that initially, as well as being in alternating treatments. And for all participants, problem behavior was occurring at relatively high rates during baseline. It was different for each of them in that the range was different. But for Wanda, Lynn, and Glinda, responding all occurred up to 20 times per minute in baseline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then for Lori, her rates were much lower. Her average was more like maybe 5 per minute. Oh, that's still plenty high. That's still every 12 seconds you're seeing some type of destructive behavior. Yeah.
That's like the dog study that we referenced. The dog.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh.
Remember when they were like, yeah, this is like very appropriate, clinically appropriate, but the dog was still barking like every 2 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was on our grab bag.
It was, yeah.
That was on our grab bag
episode 12.
Session. Episode 12, grab bag, where we talked about the bark collar. And how we don't need to use it anymore.
What? Yeah. I bought all these bark collars. I should have listened first.
eBay.com.
All right. So then when they implemented the NCR comparison, responding dropped during both conditions to levels lower than baseline. For Wanda, responding was higher in the lean condition than in the dense condition. And that was pretty clear. For Lori, again, responding was higher in the lean condition than the dense condition, and that was pretty clear as well. For Lynn, responding was reduced pretty rapidly in both conditions, although it was a little bit more variable in the lean. And then for Glinda, responding was reduced to practically zero in the dense condition, and responding was more variable in the lean condition. Following that comparison, for everyone, responding looked better in dense. They did a return to baseline to see if they could recover those initial rates, and they did. For all four participants. And then from there, they moved into a dense schedule with a plan to fade that schedule out. That's what they did for everyone. So they started with continuous attention, and they had a very nice system for decreasing that over time, in which the rate that was needed for it to be lower was based on a percentage of each independent participant's baseline rate.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not see a decrease for two sessions, and they went back to the previous level. And the fading steps went from, so if you think about each delivery of attention was 10 seconds. So they looked at how many times per minute did they deliver 10 seconds of attention. So they started at 6, because 6 times of 10 seconds
mm-hmm.
is continuous attention
yeah.
per minute, right? So the steps going down were 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.5 times per minute, 1, 0.75, 0.66, 0.5, 0.4, 0.33, 0.25, and 0.2 was the final, which was the 10 seconds every 5 minutes was the final schedule. So they were able to do that fading for all of the participants, although it did take varying lengths of time for them to achieve that final schedule that they were looking for. For Wanda and Lori, they saw some level of extinction burst, perhaps, or a spike in responding, we can call it. And then for Lynn, it was brief, and then they were able to continue with the fading. And then for Lynn and Glenda, it was a pretty smooth and steady fading over time.
Did you tell us if this was NCR with extinction or without?
You know, I didn't tell you that, and that's actually a pretty important point that we're going to want to talk about. It included extinction.
Oh, okay. I'm just wondering.
They also included a treatment generalization and follow-up component as well, in which they looked at responding across therapists and settings. Those treatment generalization probes were successful for all participants. And they also did a follow-up probe 1 to 2 months later at home and school with mom and teacher. Those were successful as well. Yeah, I really wanted to know more about, you know, certainly since last week we talked about parent training in the home. I wanted to know more, like, how did they teach this mom who had these four kids? What did she do? And they didn't include a lot of information, unfortunately. They said that they used verbal instruction, modeling, and role play to train both the mom and the teacher, and that that was successful, but that's kind of all that they included there. It does sound, I mean, maybe it's BST. It sounds a little bit like it might be BST.
Yeah.
Well, without the, they didn't describe the feedback, so.
No, that's a, that's pretty much exactly what the sentence said. Verbal instruction, modeling, and role play.
Yeah.
But there has to be feedback and role play.
Not necessarily.
And just keep practicing over and over
again. Good, great, good.
Yay!
I like how you're trying. I like that again. You keep trying.
No, we don't know. We just don't know. But that would have been nice to get a little more information on.
Mm-hmm. With the generalization probes, were they running these simultaneously with all four of the kids at once? I don't think it was ever mentioned. So they were just, even though they were quadruplets, they never were doing this procedure when all four of them were together?
They each had their own therapist.
No. And I don't believe they talked about, they talked about generalization in the sense of the skill continued and mom or teacher could run it, but not how it ran in life, which is sort of a...
I know. It was. That's really what you want to know when you leave this study to me, is how did this work at home and were they able to maintain? But if you've reached the fading point of only needing to deliver attention for 10 seconds every 5 minutes, then that's highly feasible to do in a home setting. But we don't have as much information as I wish we did about what that really looked like.
Yeah. And then certainly the idea of how much drift could mom go on before the effectiveness kind of went away. You know, did she, I missed my five.
Oh, well,
I'll catch the next time around.
Right. One would think that having a variable component to that FT schedule, making it a VT schedule, would probably strengthen the behavior that you're looking for. But again, we don't know. We don't have enough information to know. They did tell us, they included for us how many sessions it took to reach the fading criterion that they were looking for. And it was between 16 and 34 sessions, moving Lynn had the fewest needed and Glendon had the most. But overall, that's really not that many to move from a continuous schedule of attention to only 10 seconds of attention every 5 minutes. That's like actually moving pretty quickly through those levels. So it's pretty good. I really like this study for those reasons. I think when you think about advantages here, it's an easy treatment to implement. They had great success in fading it as well, which is nice to see. And another thing that they mention is that there is no extinction burst noted, other than there were those couple points for Wanda and Lori in which we saw behavior spike a little bit. But overall, it was generally a pretty nice, easy, gradual decline, even during the fading procedure. So that was great. But there are also some limitations here. One thing that they mentioned that they were concerned about as the study was starting was whether problem behavior might be adventitiously reinforced due to the continuous or near continuous schedule of reinforcement that was being provided. But they did not feel like that occurred because they didn't see behavior maintain. They saw it pretty rapidly decrease. So that was good. Another concern that you and I or we three have talked about, sorry, is that we don't necessarily know what the reinforcer is when we're using NCR. And that wasn't a concern here because they did an FA. They knew ahead of time.
So, Diana, do you believe that this type of NCR is a function-based treatment?
Well, the other piece of what they're doing here is sort of like the elephant in the room, right? Which is that they're doing extinction with this procedure. So they know that these behaviors are being maintained by attention, and they're not providing attention contingent on the behavior.
Right.
So extinction is a function-based treatment.
Sure is.
And they also know that attention is a reinforcer.
For the problem behavior, specifically.
Yes, exactly. So by withholding it when problem behavior is occurring and providing it when it is not occurring, then they're presumably reinforcing other behavior that is at least more preferable than challenging behavior, if not completely appropriate behavior.
Right.
We don't have any record of what they did instead of the destructive behavior.
Right.
So given those two components, I feel like it is more of a function-based treatment because we knew the function of the behavior here.
Right.
Yeah.
I always like to ask this question. This is my favorite question to ask in all my classes. Do you think this is a function-based treatment? Because sometimes with NCR, it's like gray, right?
Yeah.
So like because it's an antecedent manipulation, you're not really manipulating the consequences if you're not using extinction. It's hard to drive home like, yeah, that may be a function-based treatment and you're not teaching anything, which also makes you a little sad in your heart when you're a behavior analyst, right?
Right.
You don't want to walk the fine line of just being behavior modifier and throwing things at kids. So it's hard because by like the very bone definition of function-based treatment, you are using the reinforcer that's manipulating the problem behavior, but you're missing that critical, like, gold standard of teaching something new.
Yeah,
which
totally.
Which makes me, like, I'm like, well, when people ask, they're like, so is NCR function-based? And I'm like, well, technically, yes.
Sometimes.
Right? Like, if you know the maintaining variable, technically, yes. But do I think it's the best? Probably not by itself.
Right.
But that's hard. And in behavior analysis and practice, there is an article looking at function-based treatments for escape-maintain problem behavior. And NCE is actually included in that when it's used with extinction or without extinction because you are providing that functional reinforcer, but you aren't teaching anything. So it makes me like a little bit hesitant to say yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
that's true. But I think it reminds me of when we were talking about trial-based FAs and the classrooms where and then we did a DRO because, hey, it's easy and it must be reinforcing something, right? And it was effective in terms of decreasing the challenging behavior and hopefully was increasing every other behavior involved in being at school where, you know, we want to have a function-based treatment. And this, since it does meet that definition for a setting like this where you have these four children who are engaging in so much destructive behavior – does it kind of get a pass in the, well, it is, you're using function-based treatment. It's not the, maybe it's not the best in terms of what we'd love to see, but I get that maybe this is all you can do is just give attention every 5 minutes, you know, go around each kid and then, okay, great. And that's the extent of it. And you sort of hope for adventitious reinforcement of behaviors to increase. And over time, perhaps they do.
Yeah. I just wanted to bring that up because it's like a, you know, it's like one of those answers that you can't give a definitive yes or no to. You know, when someone asks you, you're like, well, and everybody hates those.
Yeah.
I can't.
That's usually the answer.
Right. Yeah. And it can't depends. Be like, yes.
Some of both.
I can't say no. I can say, well, bare bones. Maybe.
Yeah.
But we are behavior analysts and we're not behavior modifiers. So our goal is to reduce problem behavior and with big A and D underlined, bolded. Exclamation points all around it.
Flashing lights.
Right? As big as you can get it, you know, increase appropriate behavior. So using NCR alone doesn't necessarily do that. But it may be an ends to a mean to at least decrease problem behavior. So you can teach an alternative response.
And it's something that can be relatively easily implemented.
Right.
So, you know, Hagopian and colleagues probably had many ideas about how they could work to remedy this situation, but they wanted to pick one that was going to work in this family's home. And I think they did a great job.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Of doing that. You know, they were able to take each participant out, work with them to get them to a schedule that was feasible. And then they did those follow-up probes and it still looked good at home. So that says to me that they were probably maintaining the schedule to some degree at home because behavior maintained. So
right.
That's pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. Like, I am 100% not knocking that they use an NC hire here because, honestly, I'm not sure anything else would have worked in this situation in real life.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can't be like, okay, we're going to sit you down, single mother, with all four of your kids who are having problem behavior. And
feeding off each other, too. Right. I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's probably the worst.
I pictured them, like, literally climbing the walls, climbing the mom.
Oh, yeah. Right? And she's just like, oh, and her hair's, like, all over the place. Yeah. Her socks don't match. And they haven't matched for a long time, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And, like, there's nothing she can do.
Yeah.
So you can't theoretically be like, okay, we're going to sit you down, like, school style and teach you to ask for attention because that's just not feasible.
Yeah. Right. But the, and I know we're going to talk about this more, too, is that the component of extinction is critical. Like, absolutely. We have to recognize that when we are saying NCR, we're most of the time also indicating extinction is in place.
Right.
Because as much as it would be great if just showering everyone with love and attention and Tootsie Rolls was enough to decrease behavior.
It would be for me. Especially the Tootsie Rolls.
I do love a good Tootsie Roll. Me too. I love them so much. But that doesn't always work. Most of the time, you need to break that response-reinforcer relation that's already in place in order to see behavior decrease. Mm-hmm. And NCR does that by being paired with extinction.
Yeah. So.
Well, if that was our first article about NCR, let's move into our second. And Jackie, you're going to take the lead to talk about non-contingent reinforcement. A further examination. A further examination of schedule effects during treatment by Wallace, Iwata, Hanley, Thompson, and Roscoe. In the Journal of Applied Behavior Analysis, 2012. So, Jackie, give me the elevator pitch on this one.
The elevator pitch is this is actually an extension of the article we just wrote. The hugga-bugga. How do you like that? The hugga-bugga. The hug. What?
All take right. Take a sec. Take a sec.
I need to take a deep breath. We're not editing that, though, because that's funny.
Okay.
Hugga-bugga. Hugga-bugga. That's what it sounded like. I'm just being Canadian right now, which hug-a-bunch movie. Shout out
oh
to the
my
Canadians.
God! Is it the Christmas one?
Yeah.
With like a creepy witch.
Oh yeah.
Oh Jesus, that was scary as all get out.
So awesome. But anyway,
I think I have a VHS copy of that somewhere at my mom's house.
I actually found it on YouTube and watched it.
I remember being so scary. Yeah. I bet it looks super cheesy now, but I was terrified.
Sorry for bringing it back, guys. Sideline. If you want to be scared, look up the Hug a Bunch movie. It's from 1982, I think. And I had three Hug a Bunch. They were toys with big eyes, and they were furry, and they were scary, and you could go through the window into their land. And there's a witch there that had the Fountain of Youth, and the little girl wanted to make her parents stay together, I think. I think that was the crux, is that they were getting a divorce. But I did watch it the other day on YouTube, the whole thing.
I just remember when the witch died. She just like rotted away. Spoiler alert. I was so scared.
But anyway.
I won't do this podcast anymore. I'm too scared now. I gotta go.
So this is actually an extension. It's a replication and extension of the Hagopian article. There's two studies here that we're going to look at. They're going to try to replicate Hagopian. Just keep saying it because I'm rocking it now. And then they wanted to look at the effects of extinction with or without NCR. So great. That's what we're going
to
do.
Excellent. So before you get into that, though, Jackie, for those of you who are listening, if you are interested in receiving continuing education credits for listening to our show, guess what? You can! All you need to do is... All you need to do is make sure you're paying attention. In this episode, we will have two secret code words to prove that you have listened to all of our good discussion of research and random discussion of Hug-A-Bunch movies or other children's television. The first secret code word that you will need is rocket, like a rocket to the moon, R-O-C-K-E-T, or a rocket raccoon, or a rocket the Smashing Pumpkins song from their 1995 hit album, Siamese Dream. Rockets.
Wow.
I prepped for that only, I think, this week, just knowing nice. Knowing references to rocket.
I didn't know any, so I was like learning about them as you talked. Well, one thing I wanted to start off talking about with this is that just like Diana discussed, NCR schedules usually start off very dense. And this is like the common assumption that you need to start off with a dense schedule of reinforcement first, and then you need to thin it out. And usually it's like delivery of the putative reinforcer every 5 seconds, which seems unlikely in real life, right? I mean, like, let's be honest. If you had to do that all day long, it seems very unlikely.
You would need a researcher to start you off, fade it for you, and then say, okay, take it from here.
Right, yeah.
At the 5-minute or 10-minute mark.
Well, yeah, it's definitely not feasible.
Right. But to be honest, I when they do say it's feasible at the 5 minute mark, I still think that's fairly hard to maintain in real life.
A timer would be helpful.
A timer would be very helpful. But and so
I can have a timer in real life.
Yeah, I know, but still 5 minutes. I mean, if you're doing something, it's hard to stop every 5 minutes and deliver that reinforcer.
Go in and yell. Great job in there.
But, yeah. you don't actually know what the quality of the reinforcer is going to be. Right. So sort of in the last article, it was social attention, but what kind of social attention? Did they need physical attention as well as saying, great job? Did they need you to comment on what the kids were playing with? It might be as easy as just being like, everyone good? Awesome. And then that's all you need.
But you don't know.
Yeah.
And so
you try.
Right. So I'm reading this article and they're saying, you know, it's feasible at 5 minutes. And then I'm thinking to myself, okay, imagine... So I have dogs, you all know this, and I have a dog that has attention maintained problem behavior. Now it is in the form of whining, and it is my fault, 100%. Literally, like 100%. When she wants attention, she looks at me and whines. When she wants to get under the blankets, she looks at me and whines. And
do you think her behavior is maintained only by positive social attention?
Yes, 100%.
Not negative?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, yeah. Anytime, no, when I get a raised voice, responding decreases altogether.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's purely all this like cuddling.
Okay.
And love. She does not love anything else.
Okay.
Well, so I'm thinking to myself, okay, I'm at home all day. Let's imagine I am.
Okay.
I don't have a job.
And, in this scenario.
You used to have a job.
I don't know. I do still have a job. But imagine I'm home all day one day. And for every 5 minutes, I have to find her and lavish praise on her, you know, like a pet. It seems doable for a bit. But it seems like a lot for a daytime. So it's just interesting to note. And I was just thinking about that, like long-term effects. Could I actually do this forever? And it's important to think about when you're looking at this Wallace article, because their first study wants to look at, do we have to start with a dense schedule? Can we start with a lean schedule? And will they both work, basically? So it's important for us to look at that, because maybe we don't have to start at 5 seconds and work our way to 5 minutes, then maybe 10 minutes and 15 minutes. Maybe we can start with that 5 minutes.
Right.
Hang out there for a little bit and then fade out or thin out the 5 minute schedule.
So, like with toilet training, I don't always start with 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You just see where we can start. Sometimes you can start at 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that's just something to look at. And so this is what the study one wanted to look at, to see is the effects of a dense versus lean NCR schedule appropriate. Could we see the same effects?
Great.
Because with Hobopian, for some of them we did, right? You said some of them we didn't, but they didn't really run out sessions long enough.
Right. It wasn't terribly long. It was three of them, it seemed to be lower.
Right.
One of them, the lean schedule was at or near baseline levels.
Yeah. So I think that's something to think about. So they wanted to extend what they found there to look and see what happened. So that was study one, and we'll just talk about what they did in study one first, and then we'll talk about what they did in study two.
Makes sense.
After. So they did run an FA. They had three participants, all lived in a state residential facility with a variety of SIB. Or
these were adults?
Yeah, 29, 35... Yeah, they were all adults that had been in previous studies in the past, and they cited those studies, which I think is good.
Yeah.
So they had already done FAs for the purposes of these other published studies, so they used the results of those FAs to... to demonstrate that the problem behavior was maintained by social positive reinforcement. So very similar to the Hagopian article. They first started looking at the dense versus the lean NCR schedule. They had two therapists. They did baseline. The NCR sessions were in different rooms. But the procedures in the baseline sessions were the same.
Okay.
So this sometimes confuses people when you look at the graph. And you see, so if you're looking at the graph now, you're looking at baseline sessions. There is an open circle and a closed circle during baseline. The procedures are the same here, but they're in the dense schedule room with the dense schedule therapist. And then the other one, they're in the lean schedule room with the lean schedule therapist, but the procedures are the same.
Yeah.
So what they're looking for here is, do you see zero effects? Right. Similar responding across the different rooms, different therapists.
It should be the same.
It should be the same at baseline. So that sometimes confuses people.
It is confusing. Yeah.
Because you think, why don't you just have one data point? But there is a method to the madness here, demonstrating that there is no difference between therapists and rooms.
Yes.
Before we make a difference,
it's using another level schedule. Of control.
Right. But that was something I wanted to point out too, because it's something we just talked about in my class,
mm-hmm.
and everyone was very confused about why there was two data points in baseline that were different but with the same procedures.
Mm. Cool.
And that's why.
Thanks.
Yeah. So in baseline, the conditions were similar to the FA conditions, where when problem behavior occurred, SIB or aggression was reinforced with candy, cereal, yum, and attention.
What?
Candy, yum? Yum. Candy, cereal, and attention.
Oh.
Depending on the participant. I said yum.
I thought you said gum with some sort of a Scandinavian accent.
Oh, yum. Yum. Baseline levels were similar across both conditions. So there wasn't a difference, which we would expect. And then when they looked at the NCR comparison, the thin NCR was a FT 5-minute schedule. So every 5 minutes, the maintaining reinforcer, attention, cereal, candy, depending on who it was delivered, independent of responding.
Yum.
But in the FA,
it was all three of those things. Positive reinforcement. They included
the tangibles?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I was making sure I knew.
They did.
Okay.
They had all three depending on the participants. So, like, Susan liked candy.
I like candy.
Me too. You don't even know.
I do.
Yeah. Diana actually does know. She has a bowl that I just eat out of every week.
It's like a feed bag.
It's a feed bag. It's like, where's the candy bowl?
When Jackie's not talking, her face is in the bowl. So yeah. I have to mute the microphone. So
you ever hear this? It's me eating the candy. And so the thin schedule was an FT 5-minute, which is what therapists or researchers typically end with.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had a dense to thin NCR schedule, where they had an FT schedule that was dense initially, but then was thinned across sessions. And the initial NCR schedules were based on the inter-response times for problem behavior during baseline.
Yeah.
So it varied across participants, which mm-hmm. I think is cool. Mm-hmm. And that's what they did in the Hagopian mm-hmm. article.
Yeah.
So NCR schedules were thinned if problem behavior was below 0.5 responses per minute for 2 sessions. And it continued to be thinned until the FT 5-minute was reached, or criterion was reached under that specific thin NCR schedule. Initially, for Susan, there were 3 participants, Susan, Shelby, and Matt. For Susan, when they implemented the dense and thin schedule of NCR, we saw very little difference. Yeah. So both were extraordinarily effective in the NCR comparison. I mean, really, the dense schedule actually had a little bit more responding. A little blip. Yeah. But for the most part, they had very low variability, low levels, no trend. Just pretty low weights.
Which makes me wonder, like, I feel like if it's candy, like, I can wait 5 minutes for candy.
Oh, yeah.
You mm-hmm. know? I don't know. Somehow to me that's different than 10 seconds of attention. It just seems like...
Well, for you it is.
Yeah. I guess so.
For me, though, I actually prefer attention more than candy.
Oh.
So, I know. Can you believe it? So I think it's idiosyncratic, right? It's your maintaining variable.
Well, sure. Yeah.
And, I mean, the quality of attention they didn't look at either.
Yeah.
So just like what Rob was saying.
Sup. Oh.
That didn't work. Shelby was interesting, too. So she had fairly high rates of problem behavior mm-hmm. in baseline. And then
15 per minute.
That's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty
continuous. And then upon implementation of both the dense and thin schedule, she saw near zero rates for both schedules,
yeah.
which is awesome.
And but again, surprising.
Yeah, super surprising.
Yeah, to have them both
so,
in solo.
And they were looking. They were like, okay, we don't believe this. So they actually did a reversal for Shelby, and they returned to baseline levels, saw immediate increase to baseline levels, for previous baseline levels of 15 responses per minute across both conditions. And then when they looked at the NCR, we saw again an immediate reduction of problem behavior to near zero rates.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think what I love this, too, is they're yep. like, we still don't believe this. Like, this does not seem doable, and it actually doesn't replicate previous research.
Right.
So they did an NCR thin only for right. about 12 sessions.
I think it was almost longer than
yeah, every other everything condition. Else. Yeah. yeah, and they still saw near zero rates with only the that. NCR FT5 schedule.
Because when you and I were talking about this beforehand, Jackie, that's exactly what I said was, well, did they get carryover effects?
Right.
because it's a multi-element design, so you very well could.
You absolutely could.
Potentially get carryover effects, and that's why they did the NCR thin only. But no.
No. Crazy town. Crazy town, Shelby.
I know. And whatever, then, it must be a very potent reinforcer that is.
Absolutely.
You know, really reducing the EO, presumably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Presumably. And then for Matt, we saw similar rates, hot rates of problem behavior in the baseline with an actually increasing trend, which I love.
Yep.
I love seeing opposite trends in baseline. It just gives you more, you know, like, ooh, yeah, right. When you're looking at the data. And then you did see a gradual decreasing trend across both the dense and the lean schedule for Matt, although it's not as apparent than it was for Susan and Shelby. I mean, it gets there. The dense schedule does have faster effects.
Yeah, it had a greater decrease initially.
But over the course of the 20 sessions, both reduced problem behavior to near zero rates. So that was pretty interesting. So they showed really that the thin FT 5-minute schedule produced immediate and large decreases in problem behavior for all three of the subjects. But in two of these cases, they were indistinguishable from that dense schedule. So that was like shocking.
Mm-hmm. And even the third wasn't.
It wasn't,
that far off.
But so shocking, right?
Yeah, because, well, I mean, given what you'd expect, you'd think they'd be still off. Can't then believe stay it. Off.
No, me neither. I'm like, are you
but
faking?
But why?
Did you fake this? so then they asked, you know, but why? And they said, okay, maybe it's not really the NCR component. Mm-hmm. Because do we know? Because it was NCR with extinction.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So is it NCR or is it extinction? That's at play here. So is it this delivery of the putative reinforcer that's then weakening the MO for the problem behavior to be emitted? Or is it that we're just breaking that reinforcer response marriage? That's what I like to call it.
Oh, a marriage?
I like to call,
I just
it, a
call it a relation.
Most people call it.
Necessarily married.
Oh, they're 100% married. And then when extinction comes into play, divorce.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Mine are just common law, I guess.
Yeah.
50% of contingencies end in.
One in four. But yeah, so that's how I think about it. Nobody else does, but I think about extinction as divorce.
You got a microphone, Jaggy, so you think whatever you like.
Thank you.
Let everybody know.
So then they wanted to look. That's what they wanted to do in study two. They wanted to thin both schedules and look to see if there's a difference between NCR with extinction and NCR without extinction. The inability of the MO alternating component of NCR to maintain response suppression would be evident if problem behavior increased as the NCR schedule without extinction was thinned.
Mm-hmm.
But if it didn't, then we could say that extinction was at play there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And that was taken directly from the text. That was not smart, Jackie.
Those quotes.
Yeah.
Air quotes.
Air quotes, page 711.
Yeah.
That was study two. So this is where we start extending the research. Which is
this
pretty
is needed.
Neat. Yeah, super needed.
Yeah. That's the question here. Extinction.
Extinction. Is it extinction or is it
not? Big old elephant in the room.
Yeah. And it's pink. So they use the same therapist. They use the same subjects and the same session schedules as study one. So following baseline, two dense schedules of NCR were implemented in a multiple baseline across subjects. One schedule contained extinction and the other did not. And these were alternated in that multi-element design. So it's important to note here that they use those same therapy rooms with the different colors, two different therapists to help distinguish between or discriminate between the two schedules of reinforcement. So with the NCR without extinction, problem behavior resulted in the delivery of the maintaining reinforcer, whatever it was. And those reinforcers were also delivered on an FT schedule.
Okay.
So started off dense, thinned it out. Which I think is good that they have this in here because sometimes when you're implementing NCR in a clinical setting, you can't implement extinction.
Correct.
Right? So I think it's good to have this in here because this is what we typically would see in like a classroom setting or for like severe problem behavior.
Yeah.
Or for behavior that may be maintained by like peer attention.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't necessarily separate the reinforcer from the response. Yeah. So kind of cool.
There are many real life scenarios where you cannot implement extinction.
Most of the time. And so then the second condition is the NCR with extinction, where no program reinforcement was delivered contingent on problem behavior, and they still use that fixed time schedule where they delivered the presumed maintained reinforcer independently of a response. Do you guys know what they found?
Jackie, what did they find?
Oh, so, luckily for us and for them, responses during baseline were enormous. So, it's pretty amazing. They went between 15 responses to minute to 50 responses per minute. Oof. Susan really had 15 responses per minute, 50 in baseline, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And we didn't see any differential effects in the different conditions, even though those are the same procedures.
Right, which we would not expect.
Spaces, yeah.
Right.
Yes.
So what we saw here for the NCR comparison is that just like before, we did see for both schedules an immediate decrease in problem behavior with NCR with extinction or without extinction. But as the schedules were thinned, we then start seeing an increase in problem behavior when during the no extinction component. And we see, for the most part, still continuous low rates of responding during the NCR with extinction component for Shelby, for Matt, and for Susan.
Yeah.
For Susan, they did something interesting too. For the no extinction component, they saw actually complete differentiation. They saw higher rates in the extinction, no extinction condition than the extinction condition. And so they added extinction in and then saw immediate decreasing trend, removed extinction from the NCR component, saw increased rates, and then added extinction back in again and saw then a decreasing trend down to near zero rates. So I thought that was pretty cool.
So like
cool.
A mini reversal within their alternating treatment design.
So I thought that was neat. They also did that with Matt, but to a lesser degree. They just added extinction into the no extinction component.
At the end.
At the end, and did see low to no problem behavior occurring for up to 20 seconds.
Yeah. But it was right around 15 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Shelby's data are so clear.
I know, it's amazing.
It's right at 15 seconds.
This would make my heart swoon.
Right? These are some good data.
Yeah.
So you see the data paths from moving from continuous extinction up to 15 seconds, identical for extinction versus no extinction. But then when you get to that 15-second mark, when there's 15 seconds between the delivery of the reinforcer, for the no extinction condition, behavior shoots right back up to baseline levels. And for the extinction condition, it stays low.
Yeah.
Except for one data point where it doesn't. But it's so clear.
Yeah, it's like, this is dream team data right here.
Yeah. But it's like very clear that that's what was working, was the extinction. It's great to have all the extra stuff that you like, but extinction is what's really running the show.
Right. Mm-hmm. But what I think what's really important to note is that if you're going to be using a dense schedule of reinforcement, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to start with a dense schedule of reinforcement, it doesn't matter if you use extinction or not. We saw suppression across all participants for problem behavior. So I think with that dense schedule of reinforcement, it does appear to reduce behavior by altering the MO, at least with the dense schedule. But as you start thinning the schedule out, I think it then changes. So that motivational influence is going to be altered as NCR is thinned out. So then I think as you have a thinner schedule of NCR, extinction is going to play more of a role. I think that's my general take home, really.
Totally. If but I'm so glad they did this.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. And it's really good clinically, too. So if you actually can't do extinction, so if it's feasibly impossible, then...
That's infeasible?
Non-feasible?
Yeah. Infeasible? I don't know what that's word.
If you can't do it... if you can't...
Unfeasible,
yeah.
Unfeasible?
If extinction cannot be done, then you might want to implement an NCR on a dense schedule of reinforcement or a putative reinforcer.
Mm-hmm.
Just to help ensure that you're working on those motivational influences. But if you can implement in a thin schedule, which would probably be better overall for everyone, then use extinction.
Mm-hmm. Helpful guidelines.
Take home.
All right. Thanks, Jackie.
You're welcome.
Well, before we go, I want to make sure that we have one last stop into the old dissemination station. Ah, I love a stopover in the dissemination station. I don't know about you.
So refreshing.
Get a beverage. Stretch your legs.
So, in terms of NCR as a procedure,
It is relatively easy to do.
Super easy.
It has some, I mean, especially if you're able to deliver that reinforcement on a very, very dense schedule, you don't even have to worry about extinction, which I know in many, many situations and in many settings is, you know, a no-no. Mm-hmm. You can't, nope, you're, to block that or to change that is not okay. Like, we can't, the behavior mm-hmm. cannot happen. You can't do anything that allows it to happen. So it would be potentially successful treatment even with that limitation. However, there are very few times that it would work on a longer scale or a more realistic scale without extinction as true. A component.
You know, both of these studies have talked about attention as the maintaining variable and providing a lot of extra attention, or I guess candy. But I think that we also encounter this pretty often with escape maintain behavior. And so there can be times where you may have a student who's having a really difficult time. You know that the behavior is maintained by escape. So the recommendation is, let's just put them on a complete demand-free schedule, mm-hmm. right? Which is in maybe NCE mm-hmm. on a continuous schedule.
Right.
And that works. Great suppression of responding.
Right, yeah.
Because there's no demands being presented. There's no need to escape and life is great. And you know, you feel good about that for like a couple of days. And then you're like, oh, gosh. But we're going to have to fade work back in somehow. So that's the question. How are you going to get that faded back in? Because at some point, the rubber's going to meet the road. And you're either going to have to back off and go back to NCE or probably do some type of escape extinction in right. order to kind of get over that hurdle and actually have those demands back in place and being complied with. So knowing the literature and the background on NCR would be really beneficial mm-hmm. In that, so that you really understand what's going on when you're doing those types of demand-free schedules and what the types of problems might be that you may run up against later on when you do start trying to fade out your NCE schedule and
right. And I do like back in. I do like to point out too that according to our ethical guidelines, we now have to be running a risk benefit analysis for every procedure that we are going to be put in place for our students. So if you didn't know about an NCR or an NCE schedule and the side effects and the benefits, then you're actually violating our ethical code. Mm. So that's something you need to think about now. Since January 2016, what? Is that risk benefit analysis actually should be a written document. So that you can explain it to parents and people that are running it, mm-hmm. that you actually have done your research. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can't just willy-nilly pop stuff in anymore.
Right. Just like, but it's NCE is really what you're doing.
Right.
There.
Yeah.
So knowing absolutely. That is important.
Another thing I think we should think about, too, is historical influence of extinction. So if a student has never had any sort of experience with the extinction component, at least programmed... Mm-hmm. Right. No. I mean, we can't really assure that across the world we've never seen extinction. But that's something for you to think about, because I think problem behavior will be less likely to suppress as quickly than if there had right. been some historical influence, like, oh, in the past this happened. So that's something that may be a limitation of this study, is that the participants all had previous histories with extinction. So was it that history of extinction that, you know, maybe facilitated the rapid decrease in responding mm-hmm. in that thin NCR mm-hmm. schedule, and not maybe just, oh, it's extinction, it's beautiful.
Right.
But maybe, who knows? We can't really account for that, but it's something you should think about, I think.
Sure.
Yeah. Another good thing to note here is even when they did have extinction as a component in their treatment, they did not see an extinction burst.
Yeah.
Because they were also providing these additional putative reinforcers. So if you are looking to extinguish a behavior but don't want to see an extinction burst, then NCR can be a good method to do so.
Mm-hmm. A good combo treat.
Yeah.
Totally. Combo treatment.
Now, in any of the research y'all have read about the fear of the adventitious reinforcement, I feel like I've never read an article that went into and that fear that we had that we were randomly going to reinforce the wrong thing because it happened right before that fixed time schedule happened. And then the behavior got worse. As far as you know, has that ever happened?
I think a lot of people ensure it doesn't happen by putting a limited hold. Mm-hmm. So when problem behavior occurs, you would wait like 5 seconds after the problem behavior stopped before delivering the putative reinforcer.
Mm-hmm.
That actually may serve as a timeout function. But I think that's what people do in the research to ensure that it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure, besides some EAB research, I think may have looked at NCR and adventition reinforcement, like, you know, Skinner's seminal article on the superstition in the pigeon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That one is a great example when he was
just
giving reinforcers on a fixed time schedule. And then the bird was, well, I'll give you all the bird was like, what he wanted the bird to do was just stand up, stand there, and then get the food when the light went off. But what the bird was ended up doing is flapping his wings, turning in a circle, doing this head up, down, head up, down, head up, down thing. It was a very beautiful dance. Yeah.
We should try and find the video.
Oh, I have the video.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'll give it to you.
Okay.
We can post it. But so that's like a very common example that you actually did see problem behavior. Or, I mean, in this case, problem behavior, right? So you don't really want the bird being a crazy dancer before.
Behavioral excess was reinforced.
Yeah. But I think it does actually happen, unfortunately.
Just if you're not planning for it.
Not in the research. It's maybe not something that someone's looked at specifically.
Yeah. I think all sorts of little quirky things can get built in to a routine.
Yeah.
That is a reinforcement rich environment.
Right.
Well, the idea of the limited hole, I've never seen that referenced in any of the discussion of adventitious reinforcement of, oh, well, this was a component of it, other than just, yeah, they probably thought of that and added that in, but that's a good, good one to know.
It kind of builds upon NCR with extinction, because then problem behavior would be reinforced if, like, right, so unfortunately, so they'd have to put something in place.
Yeah.
If I'm going to be doing any sort of NCR, I'm going to be trying to incorporate extinction in that limited hold in.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just good to practice. Ensure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But then again, the quirky stuff happens, right? I mean, that's why we all wear blue socks on game day.
Right, exactly.
Or this is mine, which is really bad. My adventitious reinforcement, you know, like my superstitious behavior, is that every time I am listening to the radio and Kyrie Eleison comes on, or Take These Broken Wings and Let Them Fly Again by Mr. Mister. These are two Mr. Mister songs.
Oh, yeah.
From the 80s.
You've been talking about Mr. Mister.
Mm-hmm. I have the compilation CD. But I don't listen to it, funny enough, because I want to hear these songs on the radio. So when I hear them on the radio or like in a store, which is getting less and less these days, let's be honest, because they're getting older and older, I'm like, oh, something really good is going to happen. And I look for it and wait for it. I'm like, yep, sign. Something really good is going to happen every single time. So this is obviously superstitious behavior.
My superstitious behavior always gets extinguished. I'm like, I'm doing this, and this is why I'm winning this game, or this is why I'm doing a really good job. And then I lose over and over, and I say, well, F that superstitious behavior. I'll find a new one.
Mine has persisted for like 10 years, and I'm not sure. I mean, there's some...
You can always find something good.
That's
true. It's a sunny disposition.
Yeah.
I guess, but...
So, my dad told me that every time you see a white horse, you have to lick your thumb, touch it to your other palm, and then, like, slap your hand with your fist.
That sounds really unhygienic.
Nah, it's
fine. Find a stranger. Just lick all over their face.
No, your own, not someone else. You just do it to yourself. And you do that every time you see a white horse, and then when you get to 100 white horses, something great will happen. And I said, well, do you keep track of how many horses you've seen? He said, no. So, well, then how do you know? And he said, well, when something great happens, it must be because you got to 100 horses.
That's awesome.
So there you go. But you can always find something good in life. So.
And a cold.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm sure when, you know, all these great things are always happening, Jackie. It's just when you hear Mr. Mister, then they come to life.
Yeah, it's pretty hilarious.
You see them all of a sudden.
And it's actually been a really long time. It's a good thing it's not the other way around. Like, good things happen only when and only when.
Or that something bad's going to happen.
Yeah. I hear Mr. Mister because, to be honest, I haven't heard Mr. Mister on the radio in a few years. Maybe a year.
And it's been nothing but heartache and tragedy.
Right? Yeah. So that would just be sad if it had to be like when and only when. I'm like,
you're stuck doing this show? I mean, oh, God.
Oh, can't get out of it until I hear Take These Broken Wings.
Everyone, send in MP3s, please.
But yeah, so I just think that's interesting.
NCR.
Cool.
Well, I'm glad we got to talk about this. I know me for too. Me, the first time I heard about NCR, I got very confused with the idea of NCR and continuous reinforcement that never ended or was not contingent on anything. I don't know why. It took me a couple of years before I kind of figured out what it was.
Oh, no, I agree with you. It was, it's so weird. Easy, it's hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Just give them a thing the name like, over and over? What?
The name's not great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that doesn't help.
Wallace and colleagues actually suggest that we should actually call it NCR plus extinction.
That's probably a good suggestion. Mm-hmm. Or what was your other idea, Jackie?
Response independent schedule.
Sha-na-na-na-na.
You can buy all of my CDs on my new Christmas album if you can't remember.
It's at the merch store with your trucker hat and your tiny, tiny ethics handout.
Oh, yeah. I should actually
still
make
want
those.
One of those.
We got to get this ready for Christmas.
Oh, don't worry. They'll be coming at the end of the semester. Okay. That's when I make them.
Great.
All right. Well, it's almost time to go, but I want to make sure if you are listening for continuing education credits, you get our second secret code word, and it is mushroom, M-U-S-H-R-O-O-M. I pulled up like a million of them in my yard because it's been raining a lot.
I jumped on one and became big.
You don't have to jump on it, Jackie. It could fall on your head or you could run into
That's
it.
That's true. I was thinking of Mario Super World when he has like Luigi or... Yeah,
keep going. No, I'm enjoying this discussion of Mario Super World.
You know the one when he turns into a raccoon.
That's Mario, Tanuki that's Mario suit. 3. Oh. Yeah, it's not Mario World. Mario World, he gets a cape.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. But I think he has a jump on it there and like pull it up.
That's the Goomba
Mario
boot.
2.
That's the Goomba boot.
Oh, you know, so obviously I don't know my Marios. But anyway, if I jump on it, it will go into my body and make me big.
There you go.
Yep.
Any mushroom related? In the Hug-A-Bunch show, there was...
I love mushrooms.
We actually had mushroom for dinner tonight.
Sure did.
Mm-hmm. All of us. Mm-hmm. I invited myself over for
Explained
dinner.
Explained so much about this episode.
Yeah. I was like, I did the whole, like, commercial thing.
Oh, I invited you over.
Oh. Usually I do this
you
whole...
You just invited extra people.
I invited more people. Diana's like,
but
do
it
you
was
wanna...
great. It was wonderful.
Diana's like, do you want to come over for dinner? I'm like, well, what about these 7 people? Can they come too? But I usually invite myself over in true, like, commercial fashion. I'm like, are you guys having stovetop tonight? You are?
You're just outside the window.
Yeah. I'm just waiting on your front
like,
steps.
Hey, Mrs. P.
What are you doing in there? Oh, it's dinner time? Yeah, I kind of am that friend. But it's okay.
It's good. You're welcome anytime.
Yeah.
So I hope you all remember the secret code word. I have forgotten what it was.
Mushroom.
Oh, okay.
Mushroom.
Thank you. Great. So, Jackie, do you have something that you'd like to share?
I do, yes.
So which TV show do you want to talk about now?
Yeah, I have so many. I don't want to talk about a TV show. I want to tell you an actual cool thing that you could do. Get a career in behavior analysis, which is so cool. We all do it.
Yeah, man.
We all like it. Mm-hmm. We're going to do it forever, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I got nowhere else to go.
You could go somewhere else, but you don't need to because you like it so much.
Yes.
So.
You looked worried for me for a second. Yeah,
I was a little worried.
It's a quote. It's from some movie.
Okay.
The Hug-A-Bunch movie. No.
I love that movie. Yeah, so if you want a career in behavior analysis, I think you should look into the Regis ABA Master's Program. Regis is located just outside of Boston, I think 12 miles west of Boston.
Ooh.
In lovely Weston, Massachusetts. And
it's a nice place.
It's mm-hmm. pretty. It's
ritzy.
It's pretty right now. There's some leaves and there's some leaf peepers. So if you're going to drive... Make sure it's not on a Sunday. It's a nightmare. Yeah, so you should come.
It's a beautiful campus.
It's very beautiful, yeah. And we have, you know, PhD level professors. You can do a 2 or 3 year program. You get a lot of hands-on experience, help. We do study abroad trips. We have a really good time and we learn a lot. And so you should just check it out, regiscollege.edu.
All right. Thank you so much for being here, Jackie and Diana, yet again.
Oh, you're welcome.
For another fun episode. For everyone at home, thank you very much for listening as well. If you've enjoyed these antics and education, then you can certainly feel free to subscribe to us on iTunes. You can check us out online at any of our social media presences. We have a Facebook page, AB Inside Track. We have a Twitter account. You can email us with suggestions for topics. We have a nice list going right now. So if you want to get a topic in sometime soon, you got to email soon. Because that list is getting kind of long, and we can only make so many of these.
We're on episode 20 already.
I know, right?
Wow, in 5 more episodes, we're going to have a...
25 episodes.
What's that name, though?
We're going to do a grab bag.
Yeah, at 25, we're going to do a grab bag.
No, 24 is grab bag.
Oh, 24 is grab bag.
We decided 12. Oh, we want to have a pattern.
But 25, is that golden?
Like an anniversary?
Silver? Oh, I don't know. Maybe, yeah.
Bicentennial?
We're going to get each other presents.
It's silver.
Not a bicentennial.
I don't know.
I don't really know
It's
either.
One of those anniversaries.
This podcast has been going for 200 years.
Obviously, I'm not smart in that area. So it's going to be exciting. So just keep listening.
Yeah. And I know, Diana, you've been putting a lot of cool stuff on the Facebook page with various links and interesting factoids.
Yep.
Through the day.
So you go check that out. Yes. It's called ABA Inside Track.
Yes.
There's some really cool stuff on there right now, looking at time tracker, recycling a bottle, flash mob style, Sesame Workshop.
And probably more by the time this goes up, because we record
and
these a little bit
so
in advance.
So many more.
Beautiful. So yeah, come like us there. Come join in. Join in the fun.
Come sit down at the table.
Sit at the table. Well, everyone, thank you so much for listening. Thank you both again for being here. We'll be back next week with our preview episode, where we'll give you a little sneak peek into what our next topic of discussion will be. But until then, keep responding. Bye.